I'm Annalisa Van Hook. Welcome to the Science Translational Medicine podcast for November 18th, 2015. In this show, I'll be speaking with Dr. Nathan Wellum from the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health about bioengineering vocal fold mucosa to treat patients with damaged vocal cords. Dysphonia is the medical term for voice impairment, and it can be caused by damage to the vocal cords, also called the vocal folds. Dysphonia that's caused by laryngitis is usually temporary, but severe damage to the vocal folds can cause fibrosis and permanent dysphonia. A group led by Dr. Wellum has bioengineered and tested a transplantable vocal fold mucosa that shows promise for restoring voice to patients with dysphonia. Dr. Wellum spoke to me from Madison, Wisconsin. Hello, Dr. Wellum. Welcome to the Science Translational Medicine podcast.
Thanks. I'm happy to be here today.
What causes dysphonia, and how common is it?
As best we know, dysphonia or some kind of problem or impairment with voice affects about a third of the population at some point during their lifetime. But at any given time, about 6.5% of the population has some kind of trouble with their voice. There are a lot of causes. Some of them, as I think you mentioned in your introduction, are transient and kind of self-limiting and just go away. Usually that's some kind of viral laryngitis or upper respiratory infection, but sometimes the problem is more severe and does not improve. And that can be due to some kind of disease process happening in the larynx or cancer, some kind of tumor or mass, or in some cases, problems with the nerves that plug into the voice box.
One of the things that can cause dysphonia are damaged vocal folds. How are patients who have damaged vocal folds treated now?
We don't have a lot of perfect therapies for this kind of problem. Vocal folds have pretty exquisite function, and the ability to vibrate and make sound is pretty remarkable and unique to this part of the body. So when the tissue's damaged, it doesn't recover or regenerate normally, and we don't have great solutions at present to deal with that. So one thing that sometimes we offer is we have a series of materials that can be injected into the vocal fold to try and help improve their pliability or viscosity, and they are okay, but none of the products are really designed for vocal folds. Most of them are borrowed from plastic surgery and dermatology, things like that. Sometimes we do some other procedures to squeeze the vocal folds a little closer together or make the valve tighter, and that can sometimes make voice less effortful or less fatiguing. That doesn't help the sound. And sometimes we offer voice therapy or some coaching or technique-based work just to help people improve the efficiency with which they use the mechanism. But none of these things are perfect. All of them can help, but none of them really are satisfactory.
Your team has developed a bioengineered vocal fold mucosa that could be transplanted into the larynx to replace damaged or missing tissue. How did you design that implant?
We used an organotypic culture system, which has been commonly used for other regenerative medicine applications like in skin or oral mucosa, whereby fibroblasts from the vocal fold and epithelial cells are co-cultured together in three dimensions to kind of try and recapitulate the native structure and function. So we take the key cell types or cell components of the tissue, reassemble them essentially in culture, and over the period of 14 days we end up with something that resembles a vocal fold.
What was the tissue source of the primary human cells that you used to make the implant?
So we used primary cells from the human larynx, and we did that for a very particular reason. Our thinking was that this very special, unique tissue that's able to withstand vibration and impact stresses at hundreds of cycles a second and generate sound and all these incredible things, those properties are conferred by the phenotype of the cells that are in the vocal fold. And that phenotype, particularly in humans, is likely conferred by being in that vibratory niche or environment. So we thought these cells are very special and decided to use primary human cells from the vocal fold within the organotypic culture. Because vocal folds are very sensitive and don't regenerate well, we can't just sample from normal people's larynges without consequence. And so the cells that we used in this therapy came from two sources. One is from cadavers. We had permission to sample material quite soon after death when the cells were still viable. And the second source of material was from patients who had normal vocal folds, but for other reasons were undergoing a laryngectomy procedure where the voice box is removed. And those individuals also donated the tissue for use in the research.
And so after you generated these implants in the 3D culture system, how did you test them?
At the most basic level, we evaluated structure and appearance of these tissues compared with normal native human vocal folds. We also did some mass spec, some proteomics, where we could evaluate the entire protein makeup of this structure versus the native tissue. And we learned some interesting things about some protein sets associated with morphogenesis and reestablishment of the matrix within the tissue, which is really important, we think, for its function. We also did some standard electrical resistance testing just to see what kind of barrier was present at the surface of the mucosa. And then finally, we did some immunologic testing using what's called a humanized mouse system. And then we did some real physiologic or voice production testing. And we did that in a large animal model, ex vivo or outside of the body on the lab bench.
How close are you to being able to take this implant or one like it into clinical trials?
I think what is needed to move this forward is some additional experimentation, looking at longer-term outcomes, looking more in large animal models, testing the immune properties and immune response to these implants in more detail. And then really being able to scale this up requires moving into screening and appropriate banking of some cells and cell lines that would be therapeutically appropriate, moving the generation or the engineering process into a GMP-compliant system so that everything is produced in a clean, clinically appropriate manner. The other thing that is important is thinking about creating these things and seeing how well they can be stored, or they have to be used straight away, transported, all of these kind of things. So there are many considerations and milestones that need to be met to bring this thing to clinical trial, particularly with respect to regulatory considerations.
Dr. Wellem, thanks for sharing this research with us.
My pleasure. Thanks for talking with me today.
That was Nathan Wellem from the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. You can read his group's paper in the November 18th issue of Science Translational Medicine by going to our website at stm.sciencemag.org. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and thanks for listening. This podcast is a production of Science Translational Medicine and the American Association for the Advancement of Science, working together to advance science and serve society.